He kōna e purangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
This podcast includes discussion of self-harm, suicide and sexual assault. Please listen with care. If you or someone you know needs support, you can contact the Need to Talk helpline anytime, day or night, by texting or calling 1737. A wider list of mental health support services can be found on our show page, www.rnz.co.nz/Nellie's Baby.
Today is the day that Sarah gets to meet her dad, Gordon. We're going to his house after lunch with Sharon. He knows we're coming and we've heard he's really excited. In preparation for this meeting, I spent last night reading through advice for people like Sarah. Adopted children who were meeting their birth parents for the first time. The documents I found, which were mainly written by adoption agencies and social workers, made me realise that you are really supposed to prepare for this stuff. There was a lot in those papers about setting expectations and like the need for careful planning, particularly around the place and the time, and making sure that both parties have support for what can be a really emotional event. Having read all that, I feel a little bit like we're just blundering in here, but there's at least one thing that we do seem to have got right. The articles recommended that you share photos and a little bit of information about each person's life beforehand, so they're not going in totally blind. Yeah.
So how would it be in that one, Derek?
That looks like me.
Yesterday, after the museum trip at lunch, Sharon actually brought out a bunch of photos for Sarah.
That's your grandmother?
And my
that's
dad.
Your dad.
The pictures show Gordon as a wee boy in shorts, and then as a suave young man wearing a tight shirt and flares. Then he's pictured as a slightly older man with a son.
Nice hair. It's a bit boofy. I can see where I get my curly hair from, the wavy hair.
In all of them, he has the same head of thick black hair and the same look in his eyes. He's staring right into the camera, so when you look at the photos, it's like he's looking right at you.
That looks a lot more like me than anything else I've seen. He definitely looks a lot more like me than my mum.
There's one picture in particular that captured Sarah's eye. It's Gordon as a chubby baby, wearing a little shirt and suspenders. He's got that same stern gaze even then. In just a few hours, Sarah will get to see if there's other traits she shares with her dad, after not knowing anything about him for 39 years. I'm Kirsty Johnston, and this is Nellie's Baby. Before we meet Gordon, I'm going to see Sharon. I've heard bits of their family history from Sarah, and I've read a few snippets here and there on WhatsApp, and it's fascinating. All these kids, adoptions, this wayward father. But I still feel confused about like where Gordon grew up and how he actually ended up in Porirua. So before we have this meeting today, I really want to get my head around his story, and Sharon's offered to run me through it bit by bit.
Okay. Sorry, it's hot in here.
Are you okay?
Yeah.
Okay. I get set up and then she takes me back to the details of her family tree. Remember, there was her mum, Thelma, and her father, Barry, and then a whole bunch of kids.
Mum was one of 8 children. Her father died when she was young, so her mum brought them all up. It was very hard. So mum was one of the older ones, so she had to, and being a girl, she had to look after the others. She met my father, and she was really in love with him, and had sex with her on his mum's couch. And that's how Gordon came about. And they were going to get married, and so I guess it was a shotgun wedding. But he took off somewhere, which is something he normally did. He took off and came back on the day they were supposed to get married and took her to the pictures instead. So they eventually did get married, and then they had all the rest of us. But he wasn't really a husband and father. He wasn't that kind of person. He had no idea that you go to work and you bring your wages home and you fend for your family. You know, he would just disappear, or he would just blow his wages on booze and stuff, and be in and out of prison for fighting and drinking and driving.
Barry's behaviour made life really difficult for Thelma. They had no money and 6 children by then.
My cousin, my oldest cousin, she remembers a lot because she was quite a bit older. She remembers that Mum was depressed a lot of the time. She said she would just sit there and the kids would be running riot through the house and she would just tune out. They had a table, but they sat on beer crates. The boys didn't really have many blankets or sheets, so often they would just be on a mattress on the floor. My grandmother came around one day and found Mum feeding them. They were sitting in the bath crying, and Mum was feeding them flour and water, because that's all she had, to try and give them something.
Around 1962, a church worker reported Thelma to social welfare.
And they came and took the kids, and it was through a court order, and the court order said indigent, which means poor. So they were taken away because they were poor. Back then, even though they were the professionals, they didn't really know anything. You know, you're a bad mother, you can't feed your kids. Well, I'm just a poor mother. I'm not a bad mother, I'm a poor mother. And because of the way my father was, Mum was depressed, so it was very hard.
Barry died shortly after this, by suicide. Thelma was actually pregnant with Sharon at the time, so Sharon never knew her dad or grew up with her other siblings, except the one just older than her, Kevin. Thelma had somehow managed to hide Kevin from the authorities when they raided the house. After being taken by social services, the kids were split up. 3 of them, Brian, Diane, and Stephen, originally went to a farm with a woman called Maureen, but they weren't all together for long.
So they took Brian, he's number 2, over to another farm, which was adjacent to their farm, but they didn't see each other for years and years. And one day, Diane and Stephen were camping by the river, and across the river was a boy on his horse, and he was talking to them, and they said their names, and he said, "My name is Brian." And they realised they were brothers and sisters, so he, raced around on his horse, and he would come and visit them after that.
But he just didn't, they didn't know.
They hadn't seen each other for a long time. They didn't realise they were brothers and sisters.
God, it's so hard.
Yeah. So they met over the river from each other.
But what about Gordon? Over the years, he was passed from foster home to foster home. At one point, he was at Maureen's too. But then social welfare changed their minds and sent him to boarding school instead.
Gordon wouldn't settle. He wouldn't even unpack his bag because his mum was going to come back and get him. And when he was put with Diane at Maureen's on the farm, he would tell her, you know, "Mum's coming to get us. She's going to come and get us." But, yeah, she never did.
When Sharon was still really young, Thelma remarried to a man named Ron. Even though it would have been a good time to reunite the family, Sharon says that Ron didn't want the rest of the kids, so only she and Kevin lived with their parents for most of their childhood.
Gordon came to our house when he was older, brought his girlfriend with him, and all he wanted was his mum. That's all he wanted. And my stepfather said, "No, he's not staying here." Not even for, well, they stayed one night because they turned up late at night and he wouldn't let them stay anymore. So Gordon felt rejected from that because Mum could never stand up to Ron. So he couldn't stay at Mum's, and his girlfriend was pregnant and she dumped him apparently, so the rejection of Mum and her was too much.
This is when Gordon made his own suicide attempt. It was 1972. Sharon was only 8 years old, but she remembers it clearly.
I remember Mum crying. I remember her and Ron arguing, which is normal anyway, because it was an everyday occurrence, but this was a different kind of arguing. She was sort of standing up for herself more, and she said that he's really sick and he's in a coma, and that we had to stay with the neighbour. And that was for 2 or 3 weeks, so she went and stayed by his side all that time.
We can't tell you how Gordon tried to take his life. It's illegal to discuss suicide methods in New Zealand, but we can tell you that it left him with a brain injury.
And he ended up in a coma for, I think, 3 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, and they said that he would be a vegetable, that's how they called it back then. He'd be a vegetable and he'd never be able to move his right side anyway. He was paralysed, but he came out of it. He spoke very little. I think he knew his name and he said Mum. But over time he got out of bed, he was walking okay, he was talking a little bit, but just repeated himself. And so once he was okay and didn't need anything more medically sort of thing in a hospital, they sent him to Porirua Hospital, which was called then a mental hospital, and we saw a lunatic asylum before that. It's horrible. So he was in the mental hospital.
So Gordon went into Porirua when he was 17 years old. Like Nellie, he lived at Porirua until it closed in the 1990s. But unlike Nellie, Gordon had a few jobs that took him outside the hospital. He was a kitchen hand, and then he helped loading milk delivery trucks, and lastly he worked delivering the newspaper. While Gordon was at Porirua, Sharon and her mum would visit him, and sometimes he'd go to stay with them. By then, Thelma had reconnected with some of Gordon and Sharon's other siblings, and sometimes they were all around as well.
They used to tease him about his girlfriends up at the hospital. You know what, just like boys, like they just treated him, we just treated him like a normal person. The boys would tease him like, "Ooh, you got all these girlfriends, eh, Gordy?" Ooh. And he'd laugh and say, "I got caught in the graveyard." And that's probably where Sarah was conceived.
Sharon says it was no secret that the patients at Porirua were having sex, even though the hospital seemed to treat it like it was some kind of taboo.
I was told that a lot of the patients were. It was like they had two pastimes, smoking and having sex. They were very highly sexed. But I have a feeling that after they found out about the baby, about Sarah, Gordon was not allowed to see anyone again, you know, woman again. So he was given drugs to keep his libido low, and so was she. That's what we heard. So I'm not sure, but Mum, I'm not sure, but thinking about it and bringing all this stuff, it more and more comes back to me. And I think Mum may have known that there was perhaps a baby somewhere, or that he was caught. We know he was caught with someone, so I don't know if she was told that because of the baby or because he was caught up in the graveyard. That was the only place they could go where it was private.
Sharon says if her mum did know about the baby, she never brought it up again. And look, there could be multiple reasons for that, including all the differing moral and social attitudes at the time. But there is one other thing that might best explain why everyone was so cagey about Nellie getting pregnant. It turns out that under the 1969 Mental Health Act, it was actually a crime for anyone to have what the law described as sexual intercourse with a mentally disordered female. The punishment for this crime was up to 2 years jail for a staff member and up to 3 months for anyone else, except the patient's husband. Which means, technically, Gordon could have been prosecuted. From what I understand, this law wasn't really enforced. It seems like mainly the nurses kind of turned a blind eye to the goings-on in the grounds between the patients. But the law was still there, and sex was actively discouraged in other ways, like the use of drugs, like Sharon mentioned earlier, or by refusing to give the patients any privacy. Anyway, after Porirua closed, Gordon was moved into community care. It was hard for him, Sharon says. He really liked the structure and the routine at Porirua, and he liked his job there helping on the milk trucks. But she says the home where he lives now is a far cry from what she remembers of Porirua.
Meeting Gordon's carers now compared to what they were like back then, very, very different. The carers now are carers. They do care. They, you know, they found out I was there and, like, oh, we want to meet Gordon's sister, you know? And they're very, very kind and caring, and they talk to them like they're normal, you know?
So it seems like after everything, Gordon's doing really well. And now, after all these years, he's going to get to meet his daughter that he never even knew he had. Actually helps if you press record. We're just here outside where Gordon lives. Waiting for him. It's a beautiful day and there's lots of birds. Sarah and I, and Sarah's partner Tom, are standing outside her birth father Gordon's house. It's a disability group home in Porirua, at the end of a cul-de-sac and up a really long driveway. We've kind of tucked ourselves around a corner out of sight, and we're waiting for Sharon to arrive so that Sarah can finally meet Gordon.
Capture the flag at the fort down the road.
Each of us are taking turns to make small talk. Usually between me and Sarah, you'd struggle to get a word in, but she's uncharacteristically quiet today. I take a proper look at Sarah. She's wearing a headband with little red cat ears on it and a pair of white sneakers that light up when she walks. Even though we've only known each other 5 months, I've learned that Sarah uses clothing kind of like a talisman. These cute little accessories make her feel lucky, or they give her courage. Clearly, she feels like she needs an extra dose of courage today, particularly after our trip to the museum and meeting Sharon yesterday.
And it was a bit overwhelming, wasn't it, Tom? I don't know, it was a bit too much. It felt too much. Everything feels a bit too much at the moment because it's, they're really big, scary feelings and you don't know how to feel. You don't know whether to feel excited or feel happy or feel scared or feel nervous or feel sad or worried or anxious. There's just too many, so I can't really label them all, and then I just keep having meltdowns and crying. So yesterday was okay. And it went fine. It's just that, I don't know, what if my dad doesn't like me? Or what if, I don't know, I'm not wanted again? Or, I don't know, lots of feelings.
Sarah's still thinking about the museum trip and about what her mum, well, really what both her parents went through there.
It was hard seeing the ECT machines, because they even were labelled what wards they were, and I know that she was on one of those wards. Was it Ward 7? I think it was Ward 7, wasn't it? And it's, like, labelled. And you think, oh, God, you know, how was this used to help her? Well, I don't think she needed it from my research. Was it used to punish her? You know, and then that's a horrible thought. And obviously my dad had some memories about that. So that's a horrible thought too, you know. But now, I mean, just standing outside my dad's house, it looks like he's, well, this looks nice. There's a garden and it's sunny and it's got a lovely view and it seems quite quiet apart from the planes. And so this looks like a nice
Sarah place. Insists she really is feeling good ahead of this visit. It's amazing, she says, having all of this family, her dad, her Aunt Sharon, and her Aunt Mavis, Nellie's sister, being so welcoming to her.
This time it makes me feel like I belong, like having someone that wants me and wants to meet me and is happy, and having Sharon fly over. And obviously Mavis has always said that, you know, for the moment when I rung, you know, you were so loved and you're so wanted, and you know, now I feel like doubly loved and doubly wanted, and you've got an even more bigger family, plus of course my adoptive family who love and want me. So maybe I'm just really loved. And then my friends are on the phone just now and they were saying, and you're loved, you're globally loved the world over. And I just thought that was really sweet. I've gone from feeling like I have nowhere in the world to everywhere.
Hearing this, I think, okay, Sarah is ready. Which is good, because Sharon's just arrived. She'd already told Gordon and the staff yesterday that we were coming, so everyone should be prepared. After another round of hugs, Sharon makes a move to go and get Gordon.
Right, yeah, she'll go and
do you want to
rustle him up?
Any, like, advice or?
Do we need advice? No, he'll ask me a million times what my name is, what he said.
Yeah.
And he may. How old am I?
He may or may not cry. He might cry. But then
I definitely don't have feelings, so it's fine.
So I might go and just tell him so he knows you're here and that you're coming. I did tell him yesterday that you're coming today.
Yeah, this afternoon. I didn't know how well he tells the time, because I thought, is he going to be worried that we're not going to show up? And I was thinking, I didn't want him to be sat there waiting. Oh, it's 2 o'clock and it's now
He can tell the
two.
Time, but I never say the time because I'm always late.
Yeah, so runs in the family being ridiculously late to everything. Yeah. That's good.
I'll rustle them up and tell tell them that you're here so that they know.
Okay.
After a few minutes, Sharon comes back with a small older man beside her. He's about 70. He's dressed in a blue dress shirt and black trousers. He has this full head of grey hair and a big white beard and eyes like Sarah's that crinkle at the corner when he smiles. And he's really smiling. He has this huge grin on his face and he's taking these quick little steps towards us, almost running. When he reaches Sarah, she gives him her typical chirpy hello and they share a hug. Sharon looks like she's trying not to cry. Sarah hands Gordon a present, this framed photo wrapped in a scarf. Gordon's clearly very overwhelmed and very, very excited. He can't really get his words out and he keeps looking at Sharon for support. But then suddenly Gordon just turns around and gestures at us to follow. He heads towards a room on the edge of a courtyard. It's his room, and he begins to show Sarah all of his favourite things, including his most prized piece of memorabilia, an AC/DC concert ticket. Gordon, it turns out, is a huge Akka Dakka fan.
AC/DC?
Yeah.
Huh. Yes. My goodness. Yeah. Wow. 2015.
I can't see.
Saturday in 2015.
No, how much was it?
Oh gosh, $100 nearly.
$99.90.
Rich.
So you like your music?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Your rock music. You got your own CDs.
Yeah. And your flat.
Gordon's house is a little one-bedroom unit. There's a kitchen and a lounge with a TV and stereo and a huge collection of CDs. Off to the side, there's his bedroom where there's a display of more of his collectibles on a dresser.
Yeah.
Oh, I like the boat look.
Yeah. You want to take it
out? Oh, no, it's yours. I was just showing it. Look how cool that is.
Yeah.
Oh, you want to give it to Sarah as a gift?
Yeah.
Yeah?
You can if you want to, but I don't want to deprive you of your lovely boat.
No. You want Sarah to have that? So she can remember you?
You sure?
Yeah, you can have that.
Oh, thanks.
The ornament Sarah admired is a tiny sailboat preserved in Perspex. Gordon immediately said she could take it home, and he looks delighted when she accepts.
Shall we go and sit down?
Should we go to the hall?
How exciting. Gordon takes us on a tour. We go past the kitchen and the office.
What's your favourite meal?
Macaroni cheese.
Yeah, that's one of my favourites too.
Mine too.
Not mushrooms?
Aye.
Do you eat mushrooms?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Oh, slimy.
Yeah,
oh, they're
yeah.
too slimy.
Oh, yeah.
No,
yeah.
I don't like mushrooms. Yeah. Hello.
Hey, how
are
you
going? Hello.
There's a bunch of other residents around who are all very excited to meet Sarah.
I'm just meeting my dad for the first time.
You're meeting for the first time?
Yeah.
One of the other residents has noticed my microphone and they're all crowding around. It's chaotic and honestly delightful.
You're going to be famous, Gordon. Hey, you'll be famous.
Be on a podcast. You can listen to it.
Gordon, with some help from Sarah, explains the story of finding his daughter to the staff.
Because I'm adopted, but my mother was in Porirua when he was, in the 80s. And I think they thought she was probably going through menopause and then she got pregnant.
Very fertile.
So I was adopted
and the rest is history.
But unfortunately she passed away in 2008 and so I didn't get a chance to meet her. But at least I never thought I'd be able to find my birth dad, but thanks to DNA.
And he's a honey.
I wanted to do something.
What? You wanted to do something?
Yeah.
What did you want to do?
Gordon has asked if he can go to the warehouse, which is a big department store nearby. He wants to get some glue to fix his shoes and some biscuits.
When you go downtown for a walk, they say hello to you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You like that, don't you, Gordon?
Yeah.
Sharon says that we can go a bit later on, that Gordon needs to finish the tour of his home first.
Go to the hall.
Go to the hall, don't get too hot, you guys.
Gordon takes us to the hall. It's like a rumpus room. The whole way there, he's chatting away with Sarah.
Shall we sit down? Yeah. It might be a bit nicer.
When we're at the hall, we all sit down. I figure it's a good chance to ask Gordon about what he remembers about Nellie.
How does it feel meeting Sarah?
All right.
Is it exciting? You have another one. You didn't even know anything about me. That was a lady called Nellie. I don't know if you remember a lady called Nellie.
Hey?
Do you remember a lady called Nellie? No? Because that was my mum, you see. And she was called Nellie.
Yeah.
But I've probably had so many.
Yeah.
Did you have a lot of girlfriends, Gordon?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What's that?
Cigarettes.
You're in the hospital, the canteen, every Tuesday, down there waiting.
Mm.
Can I have this, can I have that, can I have this, can I have that?
We ask a few more questions. It seems like what Gordon's saying is that Nellie used to always wait down at the canteen and ask for cigarettes, which suggests that maybe he does remember Nellie after all, but it's kind of hard to know.
Did you like living up at the hospital?
Yeah.
What did you like about it?
Meeting your friends. Especially, here's what I'll do.
I did.
Kitchen hand.
Oh, you got to do some work and things. Yeah. You got to make things.
Yeah.
Gordon loves to talk about his work at Porirua. After a while, Sharon tries to bring the conversation back to Nellie, asking if there was anywhere he used to take his girlfriends at the hospital.
F ward, round the back of F ward, and down the swimming pool.
Mm-hmm. Round the back and the swimming pools. In the graveyard.
Gordon says he used to go around the back of F ward and by the swimming pool to have what Sharon calls a naughty.
Just like your brothers.
Yeah, apparently your brothers.
Stephen and Brian are the same. Naughties all over the
place. Before we can ask more about it, though, he's asked if we've got a camera.
You bring a camera?
Okay, well, we've done a picture.
We've already done a few photos earlier, but I take another one anyway.
Big smile from you. You guys look great.
We hang out in the hall for about an hour. Mostly we chat about things that Gordon wants to talk about, like music and the AC/DC concert that staff took him to and his friends down in the village. But he's happy to talk about Sarah too.
Gordon, can I ask you some questions?
Yeah.
So, did you know that you had a daughter?
No.
You knew you had a son, I think.
Yeah, I got a son. I didn't even know.
You didn't know that Nellie had a baby?
No. I had my son. I didn't know about her.
How does it feel? How are you feeling?
Good.
Yeah. Was it a big surprise to you?
Yeah. Yeah.
And would you like to see Sarah again sometime?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. I'll have to bring some baby pictures. You can see some pictures of me when I was little. Yeah.
I got an album. Album.
I could take some and I could get them printed off for you and then you can keep them.
Yeah. And what do you think of Sarah coming to see you?
Good.
Yeah. That's exciting, isn't it? Yeah.
That noise is Gordon clapping his hands in excitement.
We have the same shaped eyes.
Yeah.
I'm just prettier.
Yeah.
Who's prettier, Gordon? Well, you or Sarah?
Okay. Sarah.
Gordon keeps mentioning the trip to the warehouse, so we let the caregivers know that we're heading out and make our way to the car park. When we get to the car, Gordon decides that Sarah is going to sit next to him instead of Sharon, and she pretends to get offended.
Where are we going, Gordon?
Warehouse.
What are we getting?
Biscuits
and
craft glue. I need some craft glue. You got your seatbelts on, everybody?
Oh, we need some super glue too, don't we?
Here we go. Super glue, oh yeah.
In the car, Gordon keeps pointing at Sarah and grinning.
My daughter.
We arrive at the warehouse and Sarah and Gordon disappear off into the aisles. I take the opportunity to have a catch up with Sharon.
How are you feeling?
I feel extremely happy for Gordon. I haven't been this happy for a long time. He's so aware and he's usually quite withdrawn.
So is this a good day for him?
He's having a great day. The fact that he remembers all that stuff that he talked about is incredible.
Yeah, it's nice.
He's quite happy to just, go off with Sarah and talk about stuff. It's just, I can't believe it. They're so relaxed with each other.
It's very nice, isn't it, how he keeps saying, my daughter's here.
Yeah. He will be for a while. I think he'll be walking around. I saw my daughter, Sarah. That was my daughter. Yeah.
We drop Gordon home, and as we're saying goodbye, everyone seems really happy. I would say it's been a pretty successful visit. Over the next few days, Sharon and Sarah catch up some more. They even have a family dinner where Sarah meets some of her cousins. They also go and visit Gordon a second time. Afterwards, I get a text message from Sharon. It says, Gordon remembered Nellie. Sharon says they showed Gordon a younger photo of Nellie, thinking it would jog his memory, but he didn't recognise her. Then, however, they showed him a slightly older photo and he goes, oh, Nellie, straight away. Apparently he also remembered getting a blood test and seeing Nellie pregnant and even visiting Nellie and the baby, Sarah, in Wellington Hospital. He was saying things like the tiny, tiny baby and talking about an adoption. I'm surprised because I thought that no one knew who Sarah's father was at the time of her birth, but it seems like Gordon does remember quite a lot. Sharon actually sent me another text which said, "Oh, and Sarah was conceived on the grass at the pool." So, we found Sarah's dad, which, to be honest, when we started this podcast, we thought would be the hardest part of our investigation and turned out to be kind of straightforward. But while it has been incredible meeting Gordon, it's also kind of bittersweet for Sarah.
It's amazing I get to meet my dad. I never thought that day would come because we never thought we could find him. But then I'm also sad that I didn't start looking earlier because then I could have seen my mum while she was still alive. So I'm sad about that. So I don't know, it's too many feelings.
Obviously, even though we've been focused on Gordon, Sarah hasn't stopped thinking about Nellie. In between visiting Porirua and meeting Sharon, we've actually been working away through a bunch of emails over Sarah's information requests about Nellie's life. And finally, it looks like we may have made some progress in uncovering more about Nellie's history at the hospital and about Sarah's adoption.
Within 6 hours, she said, "Good afternoon, Sarah. I'm so sorry that our medical records gave you incorrect information. I do have the medical records relating to your birth mother, and I am in the process of collating these."
Even better, we've made contact with Nellie's sister, Mavis.
She was crying, Nellie, at home, just crying. So Mum called the doctor and said that Nellie's got to go
to
Pyra Hospital.
Thanks for listening to Nellie's Baby. If you liked this program, make sure to follow or subscribe using your favourite podcast app or listen ad-free at rnz.co.nz. While you're there, you can browse RNZ's excellent range of podcasts like Dear Wars, Conviction, and The Detail, our daily news podcast. You can also find a whole lot of Nellie's Baby's extras, including feature articles, photographs, and bonus podcasts at our show page, rnz.co.nz/Nellie's Baby, and that's Nellie spelled N-E-L-L-I-E.
Nellie's Baby is presented by Kirsty Johnston. The executive producer is Tim Watkin and the executive editor is John Hartevelt. The producers are William Ray and Justin Gregory. The sound engineers are Phil Benge, William Saunders and Mark Chesterman. The production coordinator is Brianna Juritich. Special thanks to Dr. Hilary Stace and Dr. Olive Webb for their help in producing this podcast, and extra special thanks to Sarah.